prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror movies, specifically those which have fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
I'm Lance.
And before we jump into this week's episode, I did want to make a just quick announcement. Finally bit the bullet and joined all the cool kids on Discord. I've been on there. I joined the Twitch of the Death Nerve Discord, or Twitch of the Discord, I think they call it. Okay. Which is clever.
Yeah.
And disconnected. But I figured, you know, Lance, you're not on Twitter anymore.
Yeah.
I'm going to get off it eventually at some point. I'll probably keep the podcast one, but it's a good place to chat with folks.
It is. Yeah. I think it's way more interactive than Twitter, and
yeah,
you don't have anybody staring at all your replies and maybe jumping in and calling you an asshole or something. But
true. This is true. So we have that. We started it a couple weeks ago, invited a couple folks just to kind of figure it out because it is new for both of us. But we do have an invite in our link tree, so you can jump on that if you are interested in joining our Discord. We'll also have a link to it in show notes in case you don't want to go somewhere else for that.
Yeah, please do, because Erica created some cool channels for it, you know, discussing the current episode. We have June Exploitation channels, Pimping Yourself, off-topic discussions. There's good stuff.
Yeah.
So it's fun.
Yeah, we'll have, I think the June Exploitation and Horror Gives Back channels are going to be pretty active when those months come around.
Yeah.
But yeah.
There's already been some talk. People are planning.
Oh, yeah.
We're excited.
I'm on it. I'm like, come on, F this movie. Like,
I think we need to reach out to Anthony or somebody and be like, hey, can you push this along?
Yeah.
We're ready.
Because I feel, you know, Horror Gives Back, I'm like, okay, beginning of September, get that list out so folks can
start. Oh, I have mine
climbing.
Done. I'm ready for Horror Gives Back.
It's done. All right. So Discord invite link is in show notes or in our link tree. We'd love for you to join us. Okay, so getting into this week's episode, we are going to be discussing a movie that I picked for Lance.
Okay, I know why. I know some of the reasons.
Okay, all right. I'm glad.
I appreciate it.
I figured that you would be able to recognize them. And so that movie is Mania from 1974. As of this recording, it has 210 views on Letterboxd, and you can watch it on YouTube. There's a few different uploads on there. I would recommend the one that's on the White Slaves of Chinatown channel, just because they have a lot of great content on there, and it's a good way to support good content creators. So,
absolutely.
So, Mania plot synopsis.
Good luck.
Here, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to use Adam's Letterboxd review because he attempted a summary at it. And I was like, man, kudos to Adam for even trying, because this movie, what do I even say?
Yeah.
I won't read the whole thing because, you know, he does a fairly long, it's only a couple paragraphs. But so it starts with Lisa, who's driving like an absolute maniac. Of course.
Yes.
She recounts a story from her past to Lilo, who, yeah, it is her fiance, but he is also the student of her former husband, who is now deceased. So she was previously married to a professor or scientist named Brecht, but she was also having an affair with his twin brother, Germano.
I can relate.
So there's a fire that starts in the laboratory and it's a basement laboratory. And I'm going to use laboratory in like big, heavy quotation marks, because it's not like the fun, like, oh, different colored liquids and, you know, tubes and all this stuff. It's not that kind of like lab.
It's supplies that they bought at Home Depot,
right?
And
like one big beeping machine. Yeah. And that's pretty much it. So a fire starts in there. Brecht dies. Germano is severely burned.
He's confined to a wheelchair.
Yeah, he gets confined to a wheelchair. Lisa apparently like had the key to the door. She could have saved them, but she doesn't. She just stares at it and then just like screams and no. So while Lisa's driving, then this like driverless car appears out of nowhere. And there's not technically an explanation for it, but they do mention that her husband Brecht had been experimenting with, oh my God,
like control living matter and control objects.
Yeah. And so maybe they're trying to say that he's invisible and he's driving the car, even though he's dead. Like, so his matter, even though he's dead, I don't know. I get a big F for explaining.
This is like, you could spend a whole hour trying to explain the plot of this movie. I mean, that's in the car. They say there's only one man capable of this.
Yes.
Your dead husband, Breck. It's like, okay.
Yeah. So she's driving to go back to her house because her therapist has suggested that it's the only way for her to get over her mania, her delirium, her whatever state of mind she's in right now. It's just a reason to get her back and get all the characters together in one place and for the madness to start unfolding, really.
Yeah.
I've already said too much. I feel like maybe most people should probably go into mania with like not knowing anything going, like what's going on. I'm assuming most people listening have watched it.
Yeah. I mean, even us talking about the plot, this is me personally. I still don't know anything about it. Same. So yeah. we could consider these spoilers, but
yeah, I've watched this movie 2.5 times, like twice normally and once on 2x speed, which I don't recommend because it's already confusing.
Oh, I did that early this morning and my brain is, I'm out of it, people.
You didn't even need coffee. You just watched Mania on 2X.
Remember, I had a coffee. I put on Mania 2X. It's all start my day.
There you go. All right. So Mania is directed and written by Renato Pulcelli. I think Mania is, I don't know if I could call it his best film. Maybe. I don't. They're all so different.
Yeah. I mean, well, they're different, but a lot of them are similar too.
Yeah. They have like a lot of commonalities in them.
I'm going to flat out say Black Magic Rites, I think, is his masterpiece.
You think so? Yeah. Okay. I might need to revisit that one because I think that one is just sheer nonsense.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, I think my review of that was like, I can absolutely handle some Italian nightmare logic where nothing makes sense. Like, you know, Fulci is one of my favorite directors. Of course, I'm fine with like not having an explanation for shit. But that movie, I was like, maybe I would understand it more with some edibles. Who knows? I'll give it a try again. But
yeah,
I don't know. So we got Black Magic Rites from 1973, which is even more confounding than Mania.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot longer.
Yeah, it is a lot longer. Delirium from 1972, which is actually shot in the same location as Mania, at least the main house. You can definitely see that when there's like this crypt scene where they're like looking down the hole and like talking to each other.
Yeah.
Through the crypt. Delirium has Mickey Hargitay. Most people probably know him as the Crimson Executioner from the Bloody Pit of Horror. I love that movie. I love Mickey Hargitay. I love that movie. Maybe that's my favorite. Oh, see, it's hard. Pulcelli is...
I didn't watch Delirium. I wasn't able to find it.
John had the Blue Underground DVD of it. So, nice. And he was like, oh yeah, I've been meaning to watch it. And he gave that one 2 stars. He gave Mania 2 stars. He's not a Pulcelli fan.
I get it. I mean,
I get it too, folks.
I can't even rate this movie Mania. First off,
I saw that you did not rate it.
I couldn't like Black Magic Rites the same. I'm like, I can't. A lot of the movies I watch from Pulcelli, I couldn't rate.
Yeah.
They're just, it's too much.
It's crazy. Then there, he's also directed The Vampire and the Ballerina from 1960. Mm-hmm. I think you watched this one too, yeah?
I did, yeah. I mean, his 60s films are, they have more of a plot.
Yeah.
This one was like every full moon, like a vampire comes out. It's basically kind of like a werewolf story.
Dancing.
A lot of dancing, yeah.
Lots and lots of dancing.
Same with, you know, his Monster of the Opera. It's just good stuff.
So Monster of the Opera, that's 1964. That is actually... You can find that one on YouTube still, but it's also in the new Severin box set, Danza Macabra. And Kat Ellinger talked about Polselli and briefly about Mania on the Severn podcast when they were talking about that release. She specifically mentioned that Mania was believed to be lost for years and then was just randomly showed up on YouTube about 4 years ago. So, you know, there's hope for all movies. There's been a lot of talk about Spider Labyrinth in the Twitch of the Discord channel about that movie. There's hope for every movie. You never know.
Yeah.
David Gregory, who runs Severin, he seemed pretty interested in this one, in Mania, after hearing Kat talk about it. So I wouldn't be surprised if Severin did try to get this one or find the elements for it and maybe put that in a future Italian Gothic box set. Because Danza Macabre was volume one, or Italian Gothic volume one. So I assume there's more to come.
Yeah, that would fit in nicely in a second volume.
Yeah. One other film he directed that I watched from him was more of a sex film, Ocenita from 1980, although technically it was made in 1973. And this one is not for everyone. I'll just leave it at that. There's pretty much zero plot. The person who wrote the letterbox synopsis for this one didn't even really bother, because the loose plot of it is that a lawyer gathers a group of people together who, Jesus Christ, this plot.
I mean, there seems to be a theme here with Polselli movies where you just can't describe them.
Yeah. I mean, there is something going on. Like, I was watching this when John came home, coincidentally, when a woman was pleasuring herself with a corn cob.
Corn cob.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, he was like, what's this about? And I was like, there's some people, like a lawyer at a round table, and they keep like cutting to like these side stories that I think are related to this case of this woman who was raped by a bunch of people at the beginning of the movie. But I don't know how anything is connected. I can't even explain this. This one's even harder to explain than Mania. But the person who wrote the letterbox synopsis for Ocenita wrote, quote, the film presents an array of nasty stuff like, comma, intercourse with a tree branch. That does happen. Candle masturbation. Yeah, I remember that. Whipping, orgies, toe masturbation. Yeah, there's that too. And a woman screwing around with a real corn cob. Excuse me, person who wrote letterbox synopsis, you forgot the baguette. So
wait, there's a whole
thing in this movie. A lot of food.
Is this Polselli's last movie?
1980. So, but yeah, I mean, that seems to be the last one of his run from the 60s through the 80s, though.
Yeah.
Going out with a bang.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like. Going out with a lot of, I don't know, like a smorgasbord of masturbating tools.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the right shape, you know, you do you, ladies. So Polselli was also one of five writers for a movie called Psych Out for a Murder from 1969. I was kind of looking forward to this one. This one had been on my watch list for some time because it stars Adrienne LaRussa, who was Beatrice in Beatrice Cenci, yeah. Which we had an episode on with Troy Howarth. If you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out. But I had been meaning to watch it. I did for this, and it's pretty damn boring. So can't recommend it. It's got a great poster, but
yeah, it does.
Unfortunately, the movie does not live up to it. So getting into some of the other crew, second unit director is our good friend Claudio Fragasso.
Yeah.
Director of Monster Dog, Zombie 3 and 4, Troll 2, Scalps, Night Killer, amongst others. The score was by Umberto Canone. He only has two other film credits, and both of those are Polselli films. Do you have any thoughts about the score in this one, Lance?
It's like the movie. It just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of background noise. Like, it sounds like there's a radio turned on in the room where these characters are speaking. Yeah. Like, it just doesn't fit.
Yeah.
I like it.
Of course.
Fits perfectly with
of course.
Not a Polselli.
Yeah. Cinematography is by Ugo Brunelli. He did many of Polselli's films, Delirium, Black Magic Rites, Monster of the Opera, but he also shot The Beast in Heat from 1977, which is not for everyone, but I do love that movie. And also The Slaughter of the Vampires from 1962. And I looked on Letterboxd, and because I was like, oh, I should watch that one. And apparently I already have. And I was looking at the synopsis and some other reviews, and then I remembered it. And really though, all I remember about it is giant fangs down to your chin, like fangs. So I didn't rate it highly, so I can't necessarily recommend it, but you know, take a chance. You know, you might be like Lance and like everything.
Yes.
All right. Getting into the cast. Most of the cast only have a few credits, and a lot of them mostly have just done multiple Pulcelli films. So, including Brad Houston, he plays both Professor Brecht and Germano, the twins. He has three other film credits.
I mean, he's not very good.
No, he's not. He was also in the corncob movie, Osanita.
I read an article that he reportedly financed this film, so that's probably why he's the star.
Yeah, so there was a clip of an interview I saw somewhere, and it was the auto-translate to English, and I think that came up. So yeah. I'm pretty sure that is correct. But I didn't put it in my notes because I didn't want to say it and it not be true. But
right.
That seems...
I mean, it seems like why is this guy... Like, while I'm watching, I'm like, this guy's terrible for feature films.
Mm-hmm.
He's good for telenovelas and soap opera, which we'll talk about. But
yeah, he probably also had something to do with funding any of the other movies that he was in that Pulcelli did then.
Yeah.
Then we have Ivana Jordan. She plays Katya, Lisa's assistant. She's also got just three other credits. Eva Spadaro plays Lisa. And her only film credit is Mania. And maybe she just gave it too much.
Yeah, no, I mean, if I was involved in this movie, I think it would ruin my life. Like, I don't think I could perform anyway at all. Because she loses her mind like Mania. She's great in it.
She is the main reason that I picked this movie for Lance, essentially, besides the twins. We'll talk more about her. Some other folks in the film who do have some more credits. We have Mirella Rossi. She plays Irina. The mute helper at the mansion. A couple other films that she was in. She plays a sex worker in both of the other films that I've watched her in. The first is The Skin Under the Claws from 1979. I'm only bringing this one up. I don't want to talk about it too much, but I could possibly pick this one for Giallo January in the future. And some people may just fucking hate me for it because, I mean... Not only is it nonsensical, which I know we're normally just fine with, but it's also very slow. And so some people are not going to like this one.
That's such a good title.
It is a great title. The other movie that I watched her in was The Last Desperate Hours from 1974. I watched this one on YouTube. And it markets itself as a Polizio Tecchi, which... I guess, I mean, it kind of is, but it just doesn't follow any of the normal tropes of that. So Antonio Sabato is in this, and he is this gangster who has basically two groups of gangsters going after him because he ratted or snitched on them. And he's being chased by them at this, like, I don't know how he ends up at a science lab. I think they ran his car off the road and he like hops a wall and he's like in the science lab. He gets bitten by a rat infected with a highly contagious disease that could cause a massive plague, like if he's not treated within, I think, 24 hours or something like that.
Okay.
So I know it's like a weird plot point for a movie like this. So the police are trying to track him down while he's busy killing other gangsters who are going after him and who betrayed him.
Is he infecting other gangsters with like bites or is he just like killing them flat out?
He's just like shooting people and things like that. But like there's like this ticking clock where like, okay, once it gets to this point, like it can be spread. It becomes airborne like after 24 hours. So the police are after him because of that, because they don't want this like plague hitting the city. So it's an interesting premise. And Antonio Sabato is fucking great in this movie. So I would recommend it, but don't go into it expecting like a Maurizio Merli movie with like great car chases and shootouts and all these other things. Like it's more just following Antonio Sabato kind of get a little bit sicker and sicker in every scene and go a little bit crazy and going around killing people. So yeah, that's on YouTube, Last Desperate Hours. And then... She's also in Blood of the Executioner from 1963. It's on Tubi. I didn't finish it. The poster was more exciting than the first 20 minutes of it. So
that's a badass poster. Yeah.
Yeah. I gave up on that one though. Unfortunately, I wasn't into it. And then I guess the actor with the most credits in Mania would be Isarco Ravaioli. Not ravioli, but Rava. Yeah,
that's, I'm like, it's
that's ravioli. What it sounds like. It's ravioli. Jesus Christ. That's ravioli, not, that's so terrible. I shouldn't. Okay. Ravaioli. He plays Lilo in Mania. He is also in Danger Diabolic. He is in a few Pulcelli films, Vampire, Ballerina, Osanita. He is in a couple movies that I know you've watched, Lance, The Hanging Woman, 1973.
Yeah, that one was, like I said, my brain still scrambled from watching Mania to speed this morning.
I feel like you watched it when
I didn't rate it.
I think you watched it when we were covering the Paul Mashey movie, The Dragonfly. I think there was some connection with that one.
Yeah, I don't even know.
That's fine.
I got nothing to throw your way.
No worries. you'd also watched Deadly Inheritance from 1960.
Oh, yeah. I was looking, because that was a Giallo January one that I was considering.
Mm, okay.
You know, the classic, the title gives away the whole kind of like the family's trying to fight over an inheritance.
Right.
That was a lot of fun. That one's still on my list for a potential Giallo January.
Ooh, I'm giving away a lot of hints for future Giallo January. That's true. January.
Giallo. I called it Giallo January.
I called it Giallo. I don't know what I'm doing.
I don't know.
My brain. Still,
I know.
The, Mania.
All over the place, guys. Sorry. I did watch one called Vulcan, Son of Jupiter with...
you did watch that one. Okay.
Yeah, with Ravioli.
You can call it Ravioli. We're past it at this point.
Completely like these other movies, unfortunately, where I'm just not remembering them, but it's completely forgettable. Like it's based on Greek mythology characters. Mm-hmm. Ravioli plays Mercurius, and Gordon Mitchell plays Pluto.
Gordon Mitchell.
Which is good. It's like a sword and sandals film, but it's mainly like Greek mythology characters. It probably sounds like I'm selling it, but it was more like a horny He-Man.
That you're so, selling it more now.
I know, but I'd pass on it. It's just not very good. Like, I couldn't even tell you what the plot was. It was so confusing.
Okay. I think your review is something like Venus Fuck or something like that.
Yeah, there was. It starts off, obviously, Venus is like all the men, all the gods, and all the people of Earth love Venus. And then some like lizard men pop up. There's some cool makeup. And the lizard men outfit, like it literally looks like a He-Man character that you dress and you put like a plastic... like a lizard head as a helmet on top of the body.
Yeah.
That was what the lizard men look like.
Hell yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of cool elements, but I think it might even be like 70 minutes or something, but it was like, am I going to get through this? I'm
going to turn it off. Okay. That says something. If it's got all those things, it's 70 minutes and even you don't recommend it.
Yeah.
So
it was bad.
That's rough. Couple other ones that he's in that I watched, Tough to Kill 1979. This one's on YouTube. This is directed by Joe D'Amato, stars Luke Miranda. So my expectations were probably too high for this one, but it was decent enough. It's a group of men traveling through the jungle. They're technically part of Africa. Bunch of double crossing between the characters. Like, it's okay.
Nice.
But my expectations were too high for it. So lower them, and then you might have more fun than me. And then Satanic with a K, 1968. That one's also on YouTube. It was pretty fun. You know, it's got like... The poster look is like Danger Diabolic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got this like kind of Jekyll and Hyde element to it. It's got spies and, you know, the potions, obviously, for the Jekyll and Hyde element. Some shootouts, some amazing 1960s fashion, and flamenco, just because. Yeah. So I'd recommend that one. It's fun. And that is it for the cast and crew. So we'll get more into this film right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Okay. So I want to start with a question first, Lance.
Okay.
Do you have a viewing curve, grading curve for like certain types of, like, okay. So I know I have a curve for shot on video. Like I'm not holding it to a certain standard for like how something looks. It's more, the entertainment value is more important to me than something that's more modern.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you know me, like when I,
yeah,
I
well, you're, yeah, yours.
Yeah. Is. Like it's like shot on video. You do have to, if you're rating these movies or, you know, it's all, for me, it's all about enjoyment. Like I'll give, I recently watched Class of 1999, Class of 99. I gave it like 4.5 stars. Like it's all about, and I think it's the creativity, but yeah, but with, yeah, I do have a curve, but with Pulse, like with Mania, it becomes, like I said, I couldn't grade it. I couldn't rate it because it's so, I don't know. I felt like I shouldn't be there. Like I shouldn't be watching this movie. Like let these confused characters figure this out. Because I can't, and it's going nowhere. But I don't know.
It's hard when, like, because I know I have a curve, especially for Italian horror. Because, like I mentioned, like the whole nightmare logic aspect, where it's like this doesn't make sense. But there's all of these things happening, and there is a thin plot line here that I can follow. But I feel like there's like a curve within a curve when you get into like this realm. Like Polselli clearly has a very unique voice in what he's doing because there is some sense of intent with everything that he's doing, but the intent is very closely linked to the titles of his movies, like Mania, Delirium, things like that. I don't know. He's so like, I think I gave it 3 or 3.5. But at the same time, I was like, I don't even know what to rate this, but I just arbitrarily gave it something. I think you're more correct in just saying you get a heart because I enjoyed this experience, but I can't give this a rating.
Yeah. I mean, if I did rate it, I'd probably give it about 2.5, 3 stars because I love chaos in film. I love when things don't make sense, but it's like you just said, it's different with Polselli movies because I feel like he's doing it. I don't know. It's very frustrating. Like all the movies I watched of his, well, I guess the latter ones were more frustrating than his 60s, mm-hmm. Like Black Magic Rites. It's, you do get lost in everything. Like I can't even explain it. I don't know. I'm just babbling on right now, which I kind of feel like is what Mania is. It just keeps rolling. And like I said, I feel like I almost have to step away from watching it because I don't know where I'm at. It's just frustrating.
It is like the movie itself is like someone who is rambling, but like everything that you're watching, it has like all these elements that are entertaining. You know, it's got like the lab, but even the lab isn't like that great. It, you know, it's got the, I don't want to jump to the end yet, but like the reveal of him and like, it's like, oh, really? Like if you've watched any movie with twins, like you should not be surprised at the reveal. But and I hate the word bonkers. I just do.
Yeah.
But I do want to kind of talk, I guess, like just sort of talking more about the moments of nonsense that happen in this. Because we already know from the very beginning, this is going to be nonsense. Because the quote is like, it tells us that specifically. It says, when the dark shadows of the night obscure our vision of the world, only then will the mysterious abyss of the subconscious unleash the uncontrollable forces of the unconscious, and no one will know where reality ends anymore. So automatically, if you start this movie, you read that quote, and you expect this movie to make sense, it's not going to, I don't know how to help you.
Yeah, no. And the opening is so great too, because you're immediately thrown into Delirium. Like, and I know it's a different movie entirely, but it's Lisa that is in this state that you have no idea why she's in. Like, you know, she's doing callbacks and telling this story, but I did love how I love her way of defining insanity in more or less words. She's like, if I can eat and drive a car, and knowing I'm doing it, I'm not insane. I'm like, respect. Like, okay. No. It's just, So much screaming in this, not just by Lisa, but by everybody screaming her name. And
yes, there's, what did I put like a, I put a drinking game in here because you remember my old podcast where we would have a drinking game at the end of it. So my drinking game for this, and this, these will all kill you, was drink every time Lisa says no or no, no. anytime Arena's grunts sound sexual.
Oh, yeah. You're wasted pretty quick.
Or someone screams Lisa's name.
Lisa! And then it's Germano or Germano. Mm-hmm. He screams Arena a lot too.
Like Arena, he, yeah.
Arena.
Yeah.
I don't know. We mentioned it once, but it's very soap opera-y, telenovela reactions. And that's one thing I did love about this.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that's why you picked this.
That and Twins.
And the Twins. Yeah, I feel like Pulcelli was like, hey, have you guys ever watched To the Cast? Have you ever watched any of these crazy, I don't know what it was like in the 70s, but these crazy telenovela soap operas, you know, where they're just, when they speak to somebody, they're not even looking at them. They're off in the distance, like not even, they're completely spaced out. Okay, well, go harder than that. Like, don't... I want you to go weirder. I want to throw the viewer off as much as I can here.
Yeah.
A lot of zoom in shots. I just loved it.
There's one moment, she probably does it multiple times, but there was like one moment in particular where I was like, okay, I'm definitely picking this because it's nonsense. It's over dramatic and it's got twins. But like when Lisa is astonished at something and she like bites her knuckle and yes. I was just like, okay, this is full soap opera movie.
So many of those. One of my favorite like lines of dialogue, and there's a lot of absurd conversations in this movie, but it's between, I think it's Germano and Lilo, where he's like, are you her lover? He's like, no, I'm her fiance. It's the same thing. And then it's like, you know, cutting back and forth on their reactions, like dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. When we have like, I think it's one of the first flashbacks to Lisa with her husband, Brecht, and he's showing off his basement lab. And he says, with this radiation, I can stop a bee in midair. I can control living matter. I can cure illness. And I was like, what? With how? With, you know, and again, I don't need an explanation, but it's just, it's silly. Lisa, like some things that she says and what turns her on. You know, she's cheating with Germano. Irina catches them, and Lisa's reaction to that is that her worry turned me on. So, like, she's a person who, you know, she's into, you know, probably more of an exhibitionist, likes the thrill of potentially getting caught. But then, like, she also said something later on. She's like, the thought of him dying excited me. And I'm like, are we getting in necrophilia territory now? Or just, like... The idea of him being gone is what excites you now.
Right.
It's just.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, her character, like, is frustrating to me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of flip-flopping in this, like, between characters. Like, they don't remember if, like, the one character is mute. Germano was, like, calling for her and she.
She can hear, but then he's like, well, she's mute. She can't hear. And I'm like, that's not how that works.
But yeah, Lisa's was particularly, because I didn't really care for her because all this is her doing. Like you said, in the very beginning, she was basically saying that she likes pitting people against each other as a way to insult love.
Yeah.
She infuriates others to just infuriate, you know, herself. And I'm just like, okay, like we know you don't, you get some sort of, you know, satisfaction out of fucking with people.
Right.
And now that you're being fucked with like to a crazy degree where, you know, you're staring at the camera and yelling at me, the viewer, it's like, I don't know. I have no feelings. Like, I don't really care what happens to you, which is unfortunate for me to say, but
it's true though, because, and it's weird to have that reaction about a character because it's like, well, who am I rooting for in this? Because like,
there's nobody to root for in this one.
Yeah, even Arena, because, well, I'm rooting for Arena to find her pants.
Exactly. Well, that's what I was like. Okay, so she's trying to communicate. You'd think she'd have like a pen and paper. She could still write. But I was like, oh, but she probably does not have that, you know, she doesn't have pen and paper because she doesn't have pants. Like there's a lot of things missing here.
And this is not like a no pants, that's hot situation. This is a like, she just literally walks around most of this movie with no pants on.
Right. Just a button shirt. Like There is a good scene of her and Katya.
Oh, yeah.
Just no pants dance on the bed, just wrestling.
Yeah. Naked wrestling for, and Lisa's just sitting there watching them. Cause again, she likes pitting people against each other. So she's just like, yeah, go at it. Have a tit fight here. What?
Yeah. That's one thing I did like about, this is me being gross, but the Black Magic Rites movie. It's like every 5 minutes there's titties.
Yeah. There's
just
a lot
jumping around.
I mean, it's, yeah, they're always nice to look at.
Yeah. I got no problem with that.
So there are a few, I guess some of the things I do really like about this is some of the gore in this.
Yeah.
Like the weird kind of visions that we find out at the end are controlled by this like portable board, like the ghost of Brecht, quote unquote, like the projections and the corpse that is hanged and falls down and some other stuff. When is it's like Breck, his charred body, and he's wearing a hoodie, and he's like coming at her, and his eyes cross.
Yeah, like that was creepy. That and when they first show Breck's like maggot infested corpse, who is she with? It's Arena and Lisa.
Yeah,
and they're in that crypt, and they open up the coffin, and there's like this maggot infested body.
Yeah,
that's really badass. Like the makeup was really cool and kind of creepy.
His hands, he's got them all burnt up. It's weird because like he tries to like make Lisa like kiss his hand, and she's
kiss
like
the hand, yeah,
and she's like, ew, no, gross. But then Katya's into it. She's like, yeah, touch me with your burnt giant gross hand. And I'm like, all right, I'm not kink shaming here, if that's your thing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite things about the movie too is when Germano's in his wheelchair and he just, when he's frustrated or he's pissed at somebody, he's just like ramming him and running over him. Like it's very fun to watch.
Yeah, he uses it as a weapon a few times where he just like will like kind of halfway roll over Arena, or like it's ridiculous. There's the wheelchair weapon, there's the electrocuted phone, there's I guess like where this movie just really, I didn't throw my hands up at it, but like with it almost, was when she's going up the stairs to the roof. Lisa's going up the stairs to the roof, and then all of a sudden she's caught in like a fishing net and there's eels all over her. Yeah. Like, what?
I mean, there's like a hand like throwing eels like out of the, you know, this little area. It's hilarious. When I kind of threw my hands up was, this is the best, are when she sees the footprints.
Yes.
Which is like a spy versus spy cartoon. Mm-hmm. Like they're just perfect footprints.
Like you could peel them off the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. And they disappear like with the moonlight, or it's very,
yeah.
Everything about it is just so absurd. I know we're jumping all over the place for this one, but
this movie jumps all over the place. So if anyone came to this podcast expecting us to talk about this movie from like plot breakdown, start to finish, no. Sorry, you clearly have not seen this
movie. I feel like Pacelli wants the viewer to be more disoriented than providing any type of clear story.
Yeah.
And the editing is just so jarring
in
that. And he's successful. Like, if that is what he's going for, it's just, it's mind-melting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I came out of this thinking, like, that absolutely was his intent. And that's getting back to the curve that you grade on. You know, think about, like, what's this movie's intent? Is it a comedy that's meant to make me laugh? If I didn't laugh, then it failed, you know, or maybe it's just not my type of humor. So then I can't, you know, grade it in that sense. But in this sense, it's like, if the goal of Polselli, the editor, of anyone involved with making this film, was that you as the viewer would be driven crazy.
Right.
Mission accomplished.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite scenes too is going back to some of the cool makeup and kills and stuff is when Lisa kind of, I don't know, that's when the movie really switches for me, is when she's, obviously she's out of her mind the entire film, but she's trying to get Katya to come back in to open the door for her.
Yeah.
And then she has a broken bottle, mm-hmm. and she slashes Katya's neck open with the blood spurting out of her neck. It's really gory, but that's when like the movie really shifted for me, and I'm like, okay, this is like the darkest it's been. Like it's getting really scary at this mm-hmm. point.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess we can kind of jump down to the end here. So yeah. Brecht Germano is reveals himself to actually be Brecht. Like he didn't, you know, he didn't die in the fire, but he's pretending to be his brother. He peels off the little burned piece of his skin and treats it as if like this, it's huge reveal. And yeah. I'm just like, you want to yell out loud, like, oh, you don't say.
Like, he's laughing for a while. Like he knows, like,
yeah,
it's just,
he's got Irina chained up in this like plastic tube thing. And then Lisa goes in there and they both get trapped behind it.
Yes.
And then he asks them a question. He says, make your choice, prison, death, or madness. And so, you know, we posted this on Instagram asking folks like, hey, what would you choose? We had a couple people respond on Discord as well. I'm not sure if they also responded on Instagram. Surprisingly, no, well, I guess maybe not surprisingly, but I guess it says a lot about our prison system, but nobody picked prison. That was 0%.
Yeah.
About when the last time I checked it, it was about 30% of people picked death and then the rest of the people picked madness.
Which is what, that's what Brecht picked, right? Was madness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have picked death. Like
same. Oh, same thing.
That would be my pick. But every character in this Paul Selle movie would pick madness.
Yes.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. They relish in it, every single one. And again, that's why you can't root for anybody.
Yeah. Well, the only one character did not. Lisa chose death because she goes up to the roof and jumps off and kills herself.
That's true.
When I was really hoping for a dummy drop, sorry, Matt, but no dummy drop.
Yeah. And that was, I was like, is this a satisfying conclusion? Again, like I didn't really care what happened. Mm-hmm. I did love how absurd everything was. But yeah. She throws herself off the roof and her clothes get torn off when she lands. And that's
how that works.
That's how it
that's
works.
Physics. That's like that's in like chapter one of high school physics. Like that's how you fall. You jump off a roof, your clothes fall off.
And then her fiance just Lala, I guess he was the only one that wasn't really crazy in this.
Yeah.
And it almost ends and kind of gives you the assumption that he's going to fall in love with and take care of
Irina. Well, Irina, who gets her voice back? At the end, because reasons.
She's and the Tiny Tim of mania.
Did she shoot Brecht? It seemed implied, but the editing was so like jarring.
It almost seems like he just like dies of a heart attack or like he just like dies. Okay.
I thought
like
I heard a gunshot and I was like, did Irina just shoot Brecht and now her and Lilo are getting together and now that she's got her voice back?
I don't know.
Why am I asking questions? This movie provides zero answers. It's not for everyone. I don't even like, I like it. I picked it for you, but I guess if I were to recommend it, it would be to a very narrow scope of folks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think if you go on Letterboxd, you can find the people that enjoy this type of movie.
Sure.
You know, like one of our listeners and friends, Adam, just loved it.
Yes.
And I think his rating was 5 stars because he didn't know how to grade it either. And that I fall into a lot of that, you know, those little categories too with these weird movies. This one I just couldn't give in good faith a 5-star or any type of rating because
there's no wrong rating on this.
There isn't.
You can give it a 0.5-star. I get it. You can give it 5 stars. I get it.
Right.
Anything in between. I get it. This is just, it's all how you experience mania and how it affects you, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to say about this movie. I mean, it's the characters are incredibly frustrating for me. They just flip flop. And that's one thing that I do like about it. But at the same time, I'm just like,
you don't have anyone to root for. So it makes it frustrating for you to be like, you're going on this like roller coaster, but yet you're kind of like sitting in the thing by yourself.
Yeah.
Like you're not with someone.
Well, like as a viewer, I'm like, okay, this story and this pacing and these characters just doesn't concern me. I should not be involved in this. Like Paul Selle does not want me to be here. Okay. I'm just kind of checked out, but I couldn't look away.
I don't know. I guess I sort of recommend it to some people. It's not for anyone who's just not into Italian or Euro horror at all.
Yeah. I mean, I dug the early Paul Selle stuff more.
Yeah.
Like he kind of holds he gives women a lot of power in those movies, mm-hmm. like, and their relationships between women, like their best friends. And I think there's even a quote where one of the characters, I don't know if it was the Vampire and the Ballerina or Monster, what is it?
At Monster the opera,
of the Opera. Of yeah. the Opera. Where they're like, is there anything more powerful than the relationship of women friends, you know?
I mean, that's a nice sentiment, but I can name a few things.
Yeah, but the characters there are, you know, there's kind of like this, I don't know, they're kind of powerful characters, and they end up kind of taking charge of the situation.
For sure.
Which I like those. Somebody called them, all his movies, experimental sex horror thrillers, which I can see that, like, especially in Black Magic Rites.
100%,
But even in the early ones too, where it's not 20 minutes of dancing, it's just all these kind of built up sexual frustrations between all characters.
Okay. What about what do you even double with, with Mania?
I mean, just watch anything you want to. I mean, as I was watching this, you know, the first time at normal speed, Patrick Still Lives kept popping into my head. And I think it was because of the quick zooms of the face, the floating heads, the exploding laboratory, you know, just a lot of that was,
the lab in Patrick Still Lives is adorable too. Like, it's just a wall of like beeping lights.
Yeah. And it's kind of like this hazy, you know, room. And I kind of just got that while watching this, but this is a lazy pick, but I'm just going to go with Paul Selle's chaotic masterpiece and do Black Magic Rites.
That's completely fair, because I did the same thing and picked another Paul Selle film. Yeah, okay. I was like, look, if you're here for Mania, then you're here for this one too. And so I actually picked Delirium from 1972 for this.
Yeah, because I think both of these works, or any Paul Selle movie works, specifically the latter ones, because I think even if you're not signed on to watch these movies, this is a potential, it's like a possible clear the room double feature.
Yeah.
So we'd start with what you know, your pick here with Mania. That's what I would start. We'd lose some people for sure.
Oh, 100%.
Followed up with Black Magic Rites for a true test of endurance.
People throw up their hands and like more people walk out. And those of you who are left standing, cheers to you.
Yeah. And this is still on Kino Cult right now, Black Magic Rites. Okay, so I would watch it. And anybody, that's one I do recommend. But it could be more frustrating than Mania for most people.
Yeah, it was for me.
Right.
But again, I'm going to revisit it because that was my first Paul Selle film. And I think, you know, we didn't really talk about how do you experience Paul Selle? And I think the best way to do that is probably with movies like Vampire and Ballerina or Monster of the Opera, to, you know, it's not quite as out there.
Yeah.
And then you can dip your toes in Black Magic Rites, Mania, Delirium. If you really want to get crazy, you can, you know, get in some corn on the cob, you know.
I need to look at that. I need to seek that out.
But yeah, my double feature is basically like just let's sheer madness. We're going to Delirium, Mania. It almost is too perfect together. But again, mine would probably clear the room on the first movie, clear some more second movie. And then who's ever left standing, you get a fucking trophy.
Yeah, you get a corn on the cob.
Golden corn on the cob.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to try and like summarize Black Magic Rites, but it's
impossible. No, I'm not even going to try this with Delirium. I tried barely. Well, that one has a little more of a plot than Mania does. Mickey Hargate is fun in that one, sort of.
Yeah.
I love him in everything, though, so.
Yeah, I mean, he would have been great as the twin brothers in this movie.
But he didn't fund it, so.
Exactly. That's why I think that is true.
Bummer. All right. We've experienced Paul Selle. We can mark that one off the list. So what do you have for our next movie?
Okay, I'm going to go with the palate cleanser after this.
Okay.
Something a little classic. I'm going 60s black and white photography. I know I've been picking some of those, but
yeah.
The Ghost of Sierra de Cobre from 1964.
I don't know this one.
So this was written by Joseph Stefano, who was known for writing the script for Hitchcock's Psycho.
Ooh.
But Cobre is the only film. This is the only film he directed. It stars a young Martin Landau.
Oh, hello.
Playing an architect by day, but paranormal investigator by night.
Yeah.
And he's hired by Vivia, the wife of the very wealthy Henry, who's being haunted by the ghost of his recently deceased mother. And Henry's mother was terrified of being buried alive. So she had a telephone installed in her crypt before she passed, and Henry begins receiving phone calls from his dead mother.
Okay.
So bring in Martin Landau to figure this shit out. Yeah, it's beautifully shot. Like I said, it's black and white. This is, it's, and the script, Stefano's script, is just full of twists and turns that keep you guessing until the end credits. It was originally written and filmed as a failed TV pilot.
Okay.
So that was under the title The Haunted, and there is a like a 53-minute version out there. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, we'll talk about why it was shot down, but Stefano reshot some more footage, and there's an 81 film feature film, Ghost of Sierra de Cobre.
Okay.
It's on YouTube. It's on Tubi. Kino released the film on DVD and Blu-ray back in 2018. So there's a release out there, a physical release.
Okay.
A few options to watch it. It currently has 544 views on Letterboxd. And I think it's a story, like I said, there's a lot of twists and turns, but you can follow it. So after Mania, for those who watched it, I don't know, this might settle you down a little.
I don't know. Lars has a review of this, and he says that heady foreshot of psychedelic consciousness.
Okay.
I'm intrigued and I'm excited. I've never heard of this. Lars's review has me intrigued.
It's good.
If you aren't already, you can follow this podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. Check our link tree to join our Discord. We'll probably also put a link to that in our Instagram stories at some point, too, for folks who want to join there. You can follow me on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter at Hex Massacre.
You can follow me on Letterboxd and Instagram at L Shibe.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you back next episode. Or no, no, no.
Lisa!
You're tearing me apart. We shouldn't end on that. God damn it.
That's good. Come on.
All right.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about 1,000 cats would look like?
It's called Night of 1,000 Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video! Woo!